Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Of Mike Tomlin. He's Tomlin's mouthpiece when it comes to the defense. He's Tomlin's PR man and spokesperson for the defense. That's what he has to do in that job, is relay the Tomlin talking points on the defense to the media when they ask more expansive questions about their defense, more than we get on Tuesdays at Tomlin's press conferences. And Terrell Austin, once in a while, will... you can tell, break off from Tomlin, and he'll sneak in his own personal thoughts on things, which when they conflict with Tomlin is just fantastic. We do have some answers from him that were just given to Jeff Hathorne and the troop of Steelers media who have remained in Pittsburgh, including Ray Fittipaldo, who watched practice today and is going to join us in about 15 minutes. Communication problems have been so bad that Austin, who I think is a skilled communicator, dropped F-bombs last week, much to the ire of the people he works for, who are not thrilled that a coach in a controlled setting like a press conference days after a game would drop F-bombs and curse. To the best of my knowledge, we don't have Austin going on any fiery rants here, but we do have him talking again for the fourth week in a row about communication issues and communication problems. And here's what he said moments ago about trying to fix those communication problems in the secondary.
Yeah, I think every weekend we get to work, and every weekend we get to play. I think that's what that's an opportunity for us to get better and get more familiar with each other in the heat of battle. You know, there's certain things that go on in camp, and that's good. But until you're in the game and you see how guys react and go in the game and learn them in the game, now that we're starting to get those game snaps under our belt, kind of see us getting a little bit better. We got a long ways to go, don't get me wrong. But I feel we can get there because I think I like the talent and the work ethic of the group.
I mean, it is logical that guys that are all new to each other would not be great with each other right from day one when you are dealing with zone versus man concepts and things like that. And what you try to do isn't necessarily the same thing play to play. At least it shouldn't be. But it just makes the rhetoric from the defensive guys before the season started that much more absurd.
We're going to be one of the best defenses ever. We're going to put the cart way before the horse. We're going to overpromise and underdeliver.
They could have said things like, hey, you know, we believe we can be a great defense this year. And they didn't even need to throw in there, it's going to take time. But just don't guarantee or don't make it obvious like it's a fait accompli that you guys are going to be one of the best ever. When the people now, after the fact, want to say things like growing pains
and needing
time to work together.
When we said best ever, we didn't mean it right away. That's like the ultimate, what they did before the season and what they've looked like, even though they're 2-1 for the most part, what the defense has largely looked like. I know they forced a bunch of turnovers and what have you. Is like the total, is like the embodiment of what fans across all sports don't like. Talk a big game and fail to back it up.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the very basic thing that I don't think any fan of any team in any sport likes.
I'm sorry. I got distracted here for a second because Dorn just tweeted out a picture of Jerome Bettis with a bald man in Ireland who's like, I guess this is like one of these Irish football aficionados. And he says,
like
Mueller
me.
Meets Bussy. I don't think he looks like you. I think it's just a bald white guy.
He doesn't. No, the face doesn't look like me. He doesn't. It's not like Dan Muse where you're like, that's a little more close.
Dan Muse is the love child of you and Joe Block.
Yeah. Mueller meets Bussy. Why didn't he go Mulsey meets Bussy?
This is just a white guy.
Jerome looks pretty slim, all things considered, I would say. He looks pretty trim.
I think all things considered is doing a lot of work there.
Well, I mean, we know he played at like a very heavy weight. He looked.
I understand that, but I don't really think he should get that kind of excuse now that we see offensive linemen who go from 300 pounds to like a 150.
Yeah, but like Fanica's weight loss, while I think that's very cool for him, because generally speaking, you don't meet a lot of people who are into their 80s and weighing like 320 or 330 and healthy. Fanica like lost too much, man.
But I think we're seeing more and more of that.
No, I know. Well, those guys, you're finding
Villanueva's
out.
Villanueva's rail thin.
I mean, Chris Hoke.
DeCastro's thin. Pouncey's really skinny now.
Didn't we find out that Hampton lost a lot of weight?
He did. I saw him 2 years ago. He looked tremendous.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say Jerome Bettis here looks like he went on Awaken 180 or anything like that. He kind of looks like the same size he was when he
looks a little smaller. Chris. I bet you he's lost about 20 pounds. I bet you he's about 255, 260. I think he ran at like 280. Don't you?
280?
I think he was 5'11", 280.
Donnie, do you think he got up to 280?
Well, I mean, I bet he was in the 270s. I bet Chris isn't far off. They're always going to lie about a running back's weight, too. They want him to seem a little bit smaller.
Was Ben heavier than Bettis?
Yes.
I think he has to be because he's 6'4". So,
yeah, well,
6'5".
He was like 6 inches taller than Bettis. I think Ben played close to three bills. Because at 6'5", 300, I mean,
yeah.
See, Darnell Washington
you're right.
is like 6'7", 300.
You're
he doesn't
right.
look like he's not fat.
Here's Terrell Austin on getting killed on third and long and why the Steelers are the worst third and long team in the NFL defensively.
Some of the third and longs aren't communication. It's just, you know, how we're doing things and just we just have to be tighter in terms of where we are, in terms of our drops, in terms of what our landmarks are. You know, when we do some spot drop stuff, we have particular landmarks that we like to get, and sometimes we don't get, you know, exactly on them. Sometimes we don't break. There's a lot of different things that go into it. So it's really not just one person or one thing. And so we just got to really, you know, the timing of all it. It's like anything, you know, you got 11 guys moving at once, and the timing's got to be really good for us to be really in terms of us to have really good execution. And so that's really been a big thing for us is to continue to work on, you know, the execution, the communication aspect of it, because I think if we do that and we get in the right spots, then things are going to go right.
There's never any acknowledgement that the call is bad. It's either they're not on the same page or we gave them a play and they didn't execute
it well. That's a pretty good point. There's a lot of ego in that kind of – because if you count him as Tomlin's messenger here,
yeah.
Like you set it up, there's a lot of ego in my defense is good, you didn't run it right. And what's always bothered me about that is I think Mike knows what he's doing, but I think he gets way too in love with like his like favorite stuff
yeah,
and doesn't change nearly – doesn't that explain? Because it actually explains LeBeau's failings against Brady, too. Dick LeBeau loved the zone blitz, and did Tom Brady like picking apart any defense more than that? I mean, he made a habit.
No, those guys have done podcasts where they've laughed about
like
it.
Like how easy it was.
And it's annoyed me and bothered me.
I'm not actually going to make this just about Mike. Even going back to the guy everyone loved, his defense against the one team they could never beat was like shooting fish in a barrel. And I think with Mike, it's way too frequent that you get other teams, not just the best of the best in the league, who are like, oh, yeah, this is what Mike Tomlin likes to do. He's probably not going to deviate course from that very much. Once we figure it out, we can figure it. It's done.
TJ Watt finally had a disruptive game, and he did it mostly from the right side. We still barely see him change sides. Micah Parsons moves around a lot. The entire Minnesota defense moves around a lot. So here is Austin on why we're not seeing Watt move around.
Well, we always try to balance what's best for the team. And he'll, because he's going to have his opportunities to rush on, you know, on his preferred left side and do those things. So we're always trying to do what's better for the team. And we know sometimes he's uncomfortable. So the things we do is, you know, it's not all the time, but we have to be able to move him around so that they just don't, you know, like we've talked about many times that, hey, okay, TJ's over here on, you know, the offensive right. Okay, let's turn a protection. Let's chip him. Let's get the tackle. Let's get, you know, just make it extremely hard for him. And it doesn't take a lot sometimes for him to move around that they go, okay, hey, this guy could be somewhere else. And you still got to prepare for him. I know that's not his favorite side, but I know if I was an offensive coordinator, I don't care where that guy is. I'm going to know where he is. I'm going to take care of him.
I think that we need to adjust a little bit who we criticize for where Watt plays, because that answer makes me think that it's more of a Watt thing than a Tomlin thing.
Oh, I've thought about this for a while, and I think the clues have been there even before this answer that Watt just likes being there.
Preferred side is one thing, okay? Mm-hmm. Broderick Jones prefers left tackle to right tackle. Mm-hmm. Hearing him say he's uncomfortable on the other side is a totally different thing.
Like he thinks his get off at the snap is like incredibly good, and that's one of his superpowers. If he doesn't feel that that's as good rushing from the other side, then why would you put him?
And
there?
It sounds like he's basically saying there, like we still make him do something. We should still make him do something uncomfortable because we need to sell him on the idea of like, hey. Every once in a while, even if you're not as good or you don't like it, it's beneficial for you and the team to have you change spots.
It's basically the defensive version of eat your vegetables. They're good for you.
Yeah, I
also would say if you're now that because I've been on this side that it's more of a Watt thing. There are many things we could criticize Mike for and we do on this show, but I've thought for a while that was pretty much a Watt creation, and I think I was close to getting you fully on my side there. If this is correct, our hypothesis here based on that answer. Then I think it's right, not only with the amount of money he's making, but with what it might do to limit stuff that Austin and Tomlin would do otherwise to change up looks. Then you better get 18 sacks a year. If your lack of comfort with how they otherwise want to deploy you to show different looks at teams is why they decide not to do it, you better go out there, and I don't care if you're getting double teamed. You better go and beat the blocks and get to the quarter.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Donnie Football and a guy Joe Starkey calls the big boy, Mark Cabali, are bringing the flavor of Ireland to Shiloh Platen Pour Sunday. They're going to have kegs and eggs, a live bagpiper, and samples from Dubliner Whiskey and Fire Whistle Red Irish Ale. The doors at Shiloh Platen Pour open at 8 in the morning. Drinks will be flowing, they're promising. Cheer on the black and gold at Shiloh Platen Pour Sunday, starting at 8 on 93.7 The Fan. We're at Studio B, Bowser Chevrolet. Our show got off to a rocky start because of Squirrel Hill tunnel traffic. I didn't get here until 2:10.
Our show got off to a rocky start for one person, you.
Yeah.
It was fine for those of us who are mature at age 40. Once you turn 40, you'll get it. You just plan things better.
Ray Fittipaldo could make it out to see Donnie and Cabali because he's staying back. And that allowed him to talk to Arthur Smith, Terrell Austin today and watch the Steelers' final practice before leaving for Ireland. He's brought to you by LGKG, the born and raised Western PA injury attorneys who take your personal injury cases personally. Ray, what's your gut tell you on the Steelers' secondary? Do we see Joey Porter Jr. play for the first time since week one?
So Joey kind of dodged us the last 2 days in the locker room. He didn't want to talk about it. Limited both days. If I had to guess right now, guys, I would say Joey's probably not going to play. Deshaun has a better chance to play. And I just think it's because of the nature of those injuries. You know, Deshaun is a knee where, you know, we saw Harmon come back from that when he was limited. These soft tissue injuries, you got the bye week. I think it's probably a safer call to bring Joey back after the bye. So that's my gut feeling right now. And also, if guys are confident they're going to play, usually they'll be willing to sit down and talk about it. But Joey didn't want to do that this week.
How do you think their secondary deployment's going to go? Do you sense that this is a Jalen Ramsey follows Justin Jefferson around situation?
I don't get that sense right now. I mean, it could turn out that way, Chris. I think – you know, the fact that Addison is back for this game, you know, is complicates matters. And, you know, Joey's status, you know, not being able to be a full participant this week, that kind of, you know, throws a wrench into things as well. So I think they're going to try to piece it together. I'm sure Jalen will get that matchup a few times throughout the game, but I don't think this is going to be strictly a follow game for Jalen Ramsey on Jefferson. I mean, they got a lot of weapons over there, and I don't think you could afford to do that against an offense like that.
Ray, I thought Terrell Austin made it pretty clear that the biggest reason why we don't see T.J. Watt move around like Micah Parsons or Myles Garrett is because T.J. Watt doesn't want to. T.J. Watt's preference is the left side, and he even threw the word uncomfortable around a couple of times. Is that your understanding of things?
Yeah. Well, T.J. said that, I think, 2017 or 2018. We've known that for quite some time. You know, T.J., the day after the Ravens loss, the playoff loss, said he was going to be more open to it. But clearly, it's not something that he really has a comfort level with. So, you know, not that the cat was out of the bag. We all kind of knew that was the side that TJ liked to play on. They're just going to have to work around it, guys. You know, Nick Herbig produced last week. If Herbig produces and Watt produces, it's not an issue. The last piece or pieces is consistent interior pressure. We saw that a little bit last week with Harmon. You know, Hayward made the big play with the tip, but you know, Cam Hayward was talking about it today. They need better pass rush inside if TJ is going to continue to get doubled outside, and they just haven't had that consistently enough through three games. But the fact that Harmon is back now, I do think you'll see a little bit of an uptick there.
How much of that did they think, too, they were going to get from Keanu Benton, like just being a guy up there with Harmon and Hayward who was going to be kind of a three-headed monster? I know Y.A. Black made them, it was an unexpected preseason standout, but I just keep coming back to, if we're going to talk about, say, a Broderick Jones on offense, pretty high pick. Keanu Benton just feels like he's sliding further and further away from relevance here, Ray.
Yeah, I think you saw Equality played 17 snaps, guys, against the Patriots. I wouldn't be surprised if you see that number continue to grow. Equality had three tackles. Benton only had one. Wasn't much pass rush there from Keanu in that game. It's been a tough season so far for him. You know, you mentioned it. He's a high pick. They're not going to give up on the guy. But at some point, just like Broderick Jones, you have to produce. You have to play. You have to play well to keep your job, and I don't think we're there yet with Equale replacing Benton, but I would expect to see Equale get a few more snaps if he continues to play at the level he did against the Patriots.
I apologize. I got distracted at the start of that answer because Brian Reynolds just got robbed of a home run that would have tied the Pirates-Reds game in the ninth inning, so the Pirates lose 2-1 to the Reds. We'll get to that in a second once we're done with Ray. In that answer to Mulsey's question, did you reference why Y.A. Black is playing defensive end and not playing nose tackle? Why not go Harmon, Black, and Hayward up front, Ray?
Yeah, I mean, they've been pretty transparent about that. They think Keanu Benton's experience and his ability to read the inside blocking schemes is the reason he's there right now. And there's also there's a physical trait aspect of this as well with Y.A. He's got really long arms, and they feel like he could be a good four-eye technique in the league. But eventually, you know, some games you just need bigger bodies in there. I think Y.A. Black is going to be able to play nose at some point, but they just don't feel at this point that he would understand exactly what's going on in there to do that job well.
Interesting.
Ray, to move it to the other side with Arthur Smith today, Pony and I both got the sense when he was asked about the lack of kind of explosive plays and just overall
tight ends.
Yeah, tight ends. Everything he was asked about, why the offense isn't doing this or that. Did you get the same impression we did that he was tacitly, without actually saying it, blaming it on his offensive line? Like, hey, yeah, we'd love to do all these things, but those guys have to block for me to be able to dial this stuff up?
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to Aaron Rodgers and DK Metcalf yesterday, they basically said the same thing. I mean, we asked Aaron, you know, how can you how can you get the passing game going? And he went into this, you know, too high shell that they're facing, and he came out and said, we got to run the ball better. And, you know, I wrote about this today. If they're not going to run the ball better, DK stats aren't going to improve appreciably, and the same goes for Freiermuth and Jonnu Smith as well. So, shelled out a lot of big money for those three guys, and for them to be putting up the numbers in the passing game that they are is certainly disappointing at this point. Now, Arthur Smith also said they got to possess the ball more, they got to be better so there's more opportunities. That's a part of this as well, but yeah, clearly the lack of a running game hurts this offense in so many ways, but especially the passing game and DK Metcalf. I mean, DK has 10 catches, 100 and some yards, 2 touchdowns. I mean, the touchdown production is there, but the rest of it is not, and that's been a big issue so far.
Ray, when you talk to people or just from your own observations, when you look at the way that they aren't able to run the ball and you specifically zero in on the blocking, the offensive line, do you get the sense and do people say to you that they're just losing physical battles, or is it a case where technique-wise and actual blocking scheme-wise, they're not in the right places, they're not handling the right assignments, et cetera? Like, is it a physical versus a tactical deficiency?
It's everything. There are times where they miss assignments. There are times where they get to the second level too quickly. You know, Arthur Smith, you know, mentioned today about a double team that Fautanu and Mason McCormick had that led to one of their good runs. And he basically said, we need to see more of that. So I think they need to get up to the second level. That's important. You got to block the linebackers, but you got to block the defensive linemen first. So if that means more double teams, fine. You maybe open yourself up to a linebacker shooting a gap on you there, but that's the whole chess game there. I think there's been too much penetration with those guys. They're too worried about peeling off to the linebackers. They got to stick on their blocks in the first level, and then the rest will take care of itself. So maybe we'll see that a little bit more. Art made a point to mention that block specifically today, so maybe that's going to be an emphasis here going into the Minnesota game on Sunday.
Ray, you get to cover this one from your couch. Your prediction on Steelers, Vikings, the Roonies want this game so badly. Art was telling the team about that pregame or pre-leaving. You've got Tomlin and Hayward talking about winning one for the Gipper for the late Dan Rooney. Do the Steelers go to Dublin and win the first regular season game there?
Well, Tony, I think the Steelers are going to get their offense and their defense turned around. I think it's going to be better than it has been. But I think that's going to come after the bye week. I really think they need that bye week to settle things down, make some personnel decisions, and maybe make some schematic changes too. So I'm going to go Minnesota 27, Steelers 16 on Sunday.
Wow. We've had everybody pick Minnesota so far, right? No, Pomp picked the Steelers.
Pomp picked the Steelers.
But he was also kind of drunk.
Pomp had a couple French martinis influencing his pick.
Ray, we'll talk next week. Thank you.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
He swings. High fly, right field. Marte all the way back. Leaps at the wall. He caught it! He takes away a game-tying home run! The biggest play from Marte in the outfield! He saved!
for the Reds. That's not a throwback highlight about Starling Marte. That's the Reds right fielder, Marte. Brian Reynolds, one out in the ninth. Buccos down a run, trying to tie it. Reds clinging to life in the wild card race. A game behind the Mets, but they do have the tiebreaker. Pirates took the first two in this series. Tried to give back Paul Skeen's start last night. Pirates got it done in 11. Not so lucky today. Same old from the Bucks. Only one run. This offense, the worst in baseball by a wide margin. Even the worst team, one of the worst teams we've ever seen, the Colorado Rockies, lapped the field. You know, they had like 25 or 30 more runs than the Pirates. They're all by themselves at the very bottom of the league. 69-90, the Pirates officially became a 90-loss team today.
Which, by the way, hits Donnie's, fully puts in the ground Donnie's over 73 wins, Bucko Auction House. I had that written in red already when they were really doing badly, and then they got a little hot here.
Mm-hmm.
Donnie has had a tough 24 hours in the auction house.
We will review a lot of that coming up here at 412-928-9370. If you just listen to the game or if you want to vent about the Pirates here, you can do that with us. We'll talk about them and about a game for the last time this year. Now that this one's final at 412-928-9370, doing a little PM team Bucko reaction. The Reds fans, including one Michael DeCourcy, who is kind of one of these dual citizenship guys who lived in Cincinnati for decades with the Sporting News.
Sure.
Is from Pittsburgh, is moved back to Pittsburgh, one of the great college basketball writers and sports writers really of all time. He is comparing this catch by Marte to the one Braggs had on Carmelo Martinez in the ninth inning of the NLCS in 1990, game six in Cincinnati.
Braggs?
Braggs, yes. Braggs was in right field and made an incredible...
You mean Darren Bragg?
No.
Braggs?
Yes. Is it Gerald Braggs, I want to say?
Okay. That does sound familiar now that you say that.
Yeah,
okay.
He was in the game as a defensive replacement, and he made a play almost identical to this one, except that that old Riverfront Stadium, like the fans weren't right on top of the guys in right field.
Uh-huh.
Because of the way that stadium was configured for baseball.
Yeah, it was like a Three Rivers where there was that big gap.
It's the same kind of catch in the same exact area. Obviously, that game meant a lot more to the Pirates than this one. But for the Reds, they're trying to make the playoffs for the first time since they lost the Cueto game. You know, they have not won a playoff series since 1995, the Reds.
They beat that year in the division series. Oh, God, who would it have been? That was like, was that Larkin's MVP year?
It was. Good job, Malzy.
Who would they have beaten that year? I'm not going to waste time. I thought like the Braves or somebody, but no. Probably like the Padres or some.
Well, the Braves were in the NLCS against them because the Braves went to the World Series and won the World Series against your Indians that year.
Yeah, let's not bring that up. Let's not bring that up. I'd prefer not. I'm actually like stressing badly. I hope Henry Davis doesn't get another start right now. I'm just stressed.
You're still looking at the auction house stuff?
He's at 160. I got him at over 156.
Oh, God.
One of the saddest things ever. Yeah, it's a great catch. It's I watched that video after you said Brian Reynolds got robbed of a game-tying home run. You know what I did find myself doing? The old wistful, why can't we even have that right now? Why can't we in Pittsburgh be the ones going, hey, holy crap, this still might not go our way this year. We might not find our way in. But we get to have the emotional investment of seeing a guy go over the wall to bring a ball back and actually feel something as baseball fans. Because really what you get as a Pirates fan right now is 4 out of every 5 days nihilism and staring into the void. And then that fifth day you get Paul Skeens making you briefly come out of it until you go right back into the void.
Yeah, but even Paul Skeens doesn't make you feel great about things because once his day is done, you have to worry about the Pirates' bullpen and also about their lineup scoring enough runs for him to get a win.
So I don't worry about him getting wins or not. As long as his numbers individually are insane, I'm like happy for him that he's doing like he is obviously one of the great pitchers ever.
So wait a minute. You don't think it's a black eye for the team that he's 10-10?
No, I think it's a massive one for the team. I'm just saying like independent of that, I am happy for Paul Skeens when he pitches great, even though I know that there's like a better than 50% chance that they're going to screw it up.
But that's why I'm saying you're talking about nihilism being 4 out of every 5 days. I think that it exists on the Skeens days too, because there's most of the time, or half the time this year, even when he pitched like the great pitcher that he is and the best pitcher in baseball, they would find a way to F it up. Coin flip every time he starts? Are you kidding me? He should win 9 out of 10, if not 10 out of 10.
No, I mean,
with the way he pitches.
Well, I told you what the stat is. It's like in his career, he'd be something like 35-1 if he had gotten 4 runs of support. He had one start this year against the Cards where they touched him up for 5 runs.
He had the bad one against the Cubs at home in his last home start.
He had
a bad out of the game very quickly.
Bad one against Milwaukee, 4 and 4 innings.
Yep, I remember that.
And then
he had another bad one in Milwaukee. He had 2 bad ones in Milwaukee.
Kind of a mediocre one at Colorado too, if we're being honest. Yeah, a couple bad ones against Milwaukee. But I was looking to see how many no decisions. Forget about losses because that'll disgust you. I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4. Like, there are a bunch of games where he didn't give up a single run, pitched long enough to get a win eligibility, so 5 innings, and got a no decision. There's like 9 times this happened to him this year. 9. Ugh. What do you think their record was in the 32 games he pitched?
You said 32?
He made
18 and 14?
They are 17 and 15 in his 32 starts.
That in and of itself is grounds for termination for Charrington. Thank you, Ben. You made the right call. You picked Paul Skeens over Dylan Cruz, even though that wasn't a slam dunk. A lot of it was also the business of baseball. We didn't want to deal with Scott Boras, who was representing Dylan Cruz. That helped make the decision easier. We made a spectacular one. We have been given, through 2 years, probably the best pitcher to start a career in MLB history. There's like maybe 4 or 5 other names on that list. That's how incredible this guy is. And yet, when he takes the mound, we pitch to, like, if he pitched every game this year, if he was available for all 162, we'd be like an 84-win team with him? 85-win team? It's just ridiculous.
I know.
I'm going to go back to this. They are the worst Pirates offense in team history. That's how bad they've been. John Wehner remarked before the game, I don't think the Reds' lineup is that much better than ours. Really, John? The Pirates' lineup has scored like 100 fewer runs than the Reds. So if the players are about the same, why are the Pirates getting such feeble production? And it can't just be one team plays in a hitter's park and the other one
doesn't. They've scored 134 runs.
134!
Maybe, yeah. And now it's 134 for the season.
And a guy,
the Reds.
And a guy who I put John Wehner's, like, baseball
know-how,
IQ, up against anybody's. He looks at their hitters. The guy was a hitting coach in the minor leagues and says, I think their lineups are about the same. And the Reds generated that much more runs? Well, then, Matt Haig, hit collector, collect unemployment, because you got to get fired after just 1 year. He probably should. Not that I think it's going to make a world of difference. But when you preside over the worst offense in team history, you're one and done, man. And if you're not one and done, then, like, are we really taking this seriously? Is there no accountability? He's got to get fired. And I don't even think it's really his fault. But when you're that much worse than the other 29 teams, something's got to be done about that,
man.
Their
team OPS this year, the Reds, team OPS heading into this game was 705, I think it was, just a touch over 705.
Yes.
The Pirates was 655. That is a big gap. That's 50 points lower. That matters.
Chris, the Pirates had statistically one good hitter this year.
Correct.
Spencer Horwitz.
Brian Reynolds has dragged himself up to, quote, average, league average. The Reds have, like, I think 3 or 4 of these guys who actually played in a significant number of games. Then they have a handful, like, sneaking right around that number.
I
can tell you right now, I know Wehner well enough to know that he does his homework, and he's probably checked, like, a baseball reference and seen that there are some similar, like, OPS plus stats. But they've scored so many more runs.
The Pirates' best hitter is a light-hitting first baseman. A guy that, even though he's their best,
first baseman.
Yes,
he's a Mark Grace.
Even though he's their best,
homeless man.
Yes, he's a homeless man, Sean Casey. You look at him and you're like, man, I wish he could get to like 25 homers at that position.
I wish he could get to 15.
Yeah,
they're gonna have They're going to have, unless Brian Reynolds goes, and he won't now because he got one robbed. Unless Reynolds were to go on an insane heater the last three games of the year, they will have one player reach 20 home runs. It's O'Neill Cruz, who knows if he even plays again if they just shut him down.
After that knee injury
after
last
knee,
night.
Yeah, jumped going into the wall. Pony, I feel like I could look this up quickly, but anecdotally, how many players do you think in Major League history have hit 20 home runs in a season and had an OPS under 700? Because Cruz ain't even close to getting
that. No, that can't be too many.
681 OPS, 201 batting average, and he hit 20 home runs. I bet you that is a very bad exclusive club to be in.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.